In this episode, we have senior brand strategist at Brand Yourself, Ryan Erskine.
What it's like working as a copywriter and care about your position online.
How a zombie film might give us the sequel we need.
Thunder! 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 Thunder!
Welcome to the Thunder Nerds, where we've always pronounced it Leviosa. My name is now forever J.D. Wright.
And I'm Brian Hinton.
And I am Frederick Philip Von Weiss, and you are listening to the Thunder Nerds, a conversation with the people behind the technology that love what they do and do web good. Leviosa.
You're saying it wrong. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
So it's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
She was something in that first movie.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you have a fear for, you know, strong women asserting themselves, I guess it was a little weird.
Oh. Yeah, once again, Brian, I don't get you. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
JK.
Hey man, listen. We're just painting the picture on the frame you give us, man. I mean, this is Bob Ross in this shit.
Ooh. Hey, speaking of wizards, we have a word wizard on the show today. Let's go ahead and welcome our guest, senior brand strategist at Brand Yourself, Ryan Erskine.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you today, sir. Let's talk a little bit about your beginnings, Ryan. You're in New York currently, but from my understanding, you're from Portland, Maine. Is that right, or did you just go to school there?
No. So I went to college. I went to college in Maine, in Brunswick, Bowdoin College.
Brunswick, okay.
But I'm actually, yeah, which is roughly 30 minutes north of Portland.
Gotcha.
But I actually grew up in Stamford, which is southern Connecticut.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Prestigious.
I went to Bowdoin to major in government and legal studies. Mm-hmm. Well, initially English, then switched to government and legal studies. I was one of those college students that didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was just sort of playing it by ear. Loved writing. English seemed like a great idea until I realized that I liked the fun English courses and not the old... sort of Shakespearean courses. So English major was out at that point.
What stirred the love for government and legal studies?
It was really just a love for reading and writing, frankly. Uh-huh. And I got to read more interesting work than what I was reading for the most part in some of my English courses. So just continued on in that track. Mm-hmm. And part of that came from some pressure that I had sort of perceived from friends and family that were like, hey, you'd be so great as a lawyer, you should do it. And so I just started that track in college and fell out on the other end, went to law school for just a semester. And that was all it took for me to realize how horrible of an idea that was. And so dropped out after a semester and... went back to doing, I started doing freelance copywriting, mm-hmm. essentially from there, taking back up my love for writing, which did some I was basically a columnist in college, so coming back out of law school, I figured it would be a great idea to pick something relevant back up again.
Yeah, I think a lot of us go to college for one thing and then come out the other end something else. Like, I went to college to be a computer animator, and then I came out doing graphic design and photography, and now I do something completely different. So, but you could always apply those things to your eventual career path and what you're going to eventually be doing. So, okay, so government and legal, English, and then how did you find yourself at Brand Yourself? How does this lead to that?
There's a human centipede joke in that whole conversation that just happened right there. It's like, oh, it goes in one way and then it comes out something else three people later. Like, it's so bad.
But yeah, so how did you find yourself at Brand Yourself? Pardon the pun.
So yeah, for me, it was a path afterwards of doing copywriting, I then was looking for more stable work than what a freelance job or a freelance life gives you.
Mm-hmm.
So I started seeking out positions where I could use some of my writing and creative skills, and found myself at an internship, actually, at Brand Yourself just a couple years ago. And from there, basically just starting from an intern at a startup company, working my way up. And I was really thankful and fortunate to be at a company that was, you know, in such a stage of growth and basically taking, you know, taking care of their employees who are willing to put in the work. So that was just, that was how I found myself there.
Nice. I'm kind of curious, going back a second regarding the freelance writing work that you did, kind of the copywriting work. Yeah. How did my, kind of curious how that worked. I'm familiar with getting freelance work in design, but what resources did you use? Was it word of mouth, or how did you get access to work?
Yeah, some of it was word of mouth. Other work I got was through either Craigslist or Elance, which is now Upwork. So some of the freelance sites, word of mouth, and Craigslist, believe it or not.
Oh, nice. Were you actually getting semi-regular work doing freelance copyright? Like, how active is that that world?
Yeah, I was, actually. The only issue was that half of my job was looking for other jobs.
Ah, yeah, you know? Yeah, that is freelance, so... yeah. Yeah, so now you're a brand strategist at Brand Yourself. Like, what exactly does that entail in your day-to-day life?
Sure. Well, so to give some background, Brand Yourself is a company that helps people take control of their online reputations, their online presence. So basically making you look great when people look you up online. And a brand strategist in the context of this company is basically someone who's helping to figure out how you, if you were to come on as a client, how to position you online. So it's some of that high level strategy, and some of it, you know, it's also wearing many hats. In many cases, it becomes an account manager and, you know, some social media work as well. But we have lots of other folks at the company who do some of those other jobs more specifically. So as a senior brand strategist, that's moving away from the account manager and the day-to-day strategy into more of a senior role. Basically, well, let's back up. Just so you guys have some more context. Okay, Brand Yourself has a product, you know, sort of like a software that helps you do it yourself, take control of your own online reputation. So that's, you know, its own freemium model, and you can do it yourself. So sort of like TurboTax, but for online reputation.
Huh. So it's an online app.
It's not an app yet, but if you go online, you'll find it, and you can sign up and do your thing, take control. If you are not willing to put in the time or just want someone else to do it for you, that's where our managed services come in. So you can come on as a client and we'll basically manage your online reputation for you. So that's, you know, the product, then the managed services. And within managed services, we have sort of the concierge level service, which is for middle market professionals, or, you know, it could be college prep, anything like that. And then I work in the VIP department, which is basically much more complex problems, sometimes corporate clients or people who just want to pay a ton of money to get their online reputation looking incredible. And so within that department, I'm basically overseeing all of the accounts to make sure that, you know, it's a mix of quality control and making sure that everyone's brand is looking the way that it should compared to their goals, all of that. So it's sort of this high-level strategy role that I'm in.
You're mostly dealing with C-level executives.
It sounds like a bunch of people looking to make lateral moves. I mean, that's generally what I saw happen in corporate, especially corporate retail. Like, I mean, Paul Raines, they got Paul Raines, who's the CEO of GameStop now, from Home Depot. So, I mean, like, they're always looking to make lateral moves to get, you know, better positions, more pay, stuff like that. So it sounds like almost like a CMS for that, like a content management system for their brand, them being themselves.
Yeah, it looks like you guys have a full service though. You do everything. I mean, the concierge one, at least anyway, it looks like you do blog posts and you make presentations. You basically like you are the presence online. Is what it seems like you guys can do. That is, am I reading that correctly?
Sorry, repeat that.
That you guys basically in essence, take the place of the company or individual. That you are their presence online. You obviously communicate with them, but you do a lot of, you do blog posts for them and presentations and write articles for them. Is that correct?
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you got it. We basically, we get in your head, essentially, after, you know, there's sort of this onboarding process where we're figuring out everything we need to know about you, discovering your brand, who you're trying to get in front of, and all of that. And then there may be, throughout the campaign, there may be a level of communication where we're going back and forth figuring out, you know, what articles we need to be putting out there, what kind of content, what kind of influencers we're getting in front of.
Managing that whole online persona.
Yeah.
But that whole sphere, absolutely.
Yeah, and imagine, too, that there's a lot of, you might have some clients that might have negative things, or there's always going to be somebody that has this and that they're going to see about an individual or a company. And if you put enough good stuff out there, you're going to also be able to possibly mitigate and push down some of that negative with the positive, and being able to control that positive message.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
How often do you have to play spin doctor?
Yeah.
No, it pretty often, only because
it's the nature of the web.
Many times you can't control what other people are saying. And so if you get high enough in a position in an industry, chances are someone is going to say something bad about you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No one's
lining up to give all these people congratulations. Yeah,
unfortunately.
I know, it seems crazy.
It's unfortunate, really.
It seems crazy.
Yeah. I wasn't quite clear what is your role in these services? You just work directly with clients and communicate what your plan is, help formulate the plan.
Well, he also manages all the accounts.
I'll give a quick explanation. Maybe the previous one was a little bit too lengthy. But in the VIP department, there are people that are content leads, right? The people that are writing the articles for you, the people that are account managers, sort of that typical structure you might find where people are working under one another under a specific account, and I'm overseeing all the accounts in the VIP department.
Oh, okay.
From a strategy perspective.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
How often,
that makes sense.
I mean, how often do you have to have, I mean, I'm sure you have to have some pretty fierce conversations or some, you know, I mean, if you know anything about fierce conversation, but the, or hard conversations with clients when it comes to like image or, you know, persona non grata and stuff like that, like, has any of that ever come up as like a hindrance, or is that an account that you then take over, or what does that look like when something, when those goals become too lofty, you know what I mean? Maybe I need to reword it, but how do you handle those?
Yeah, it's tough. One of the biggest challenges in this role in terms of client communication is making sure that the clients understand the crazy nature of search results. You know, we do all that we can to impact them, and in many cases we do exactly what the client is looking for, but some people come into an online reputation firm or a branding firm like Brand Yourself, and they're looking for a guarantee. And even though in the sales process they've been told like nobody can give you a guarantee on what you can switch around in Google, et cetera, they sort of get, you know, sometimes they yes along the way, and then they come into our department, and it's still clear that they're looking for a guarantee. So it becomes that challenge of educating them on like, hey, here's all of the things we're putting out there for you. Even if we don't make, you know, we may make your search results look exactly the way you want it to, but even if we don't, we're mitigating all of you know, all of the negative or whatever you're trying to defeat in order to, you know, seek out a new audience or portray yourself in a new way. Like, all of that work that we're doing for you still stands.
Yeah, I mean, you're not dealing with small personalities by any means.
Right, right. So sometimes it could get difficult.
There's no way to control the SERPs. I mean, you could do what you could do and put out a bunch of good content, but at the end of the day, it's just online. Either put up good content or you don't. But speaking of that kind of a challenge, from my understanding, you wrote a book on something like this, and it's called 28 Day Challenge. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's congratulations.
Right. Just a couple of weeks ago. Thank you. Appreciate that.
What's the origin of the 28-day challenge?
Sure. So in managing my own online reputation, I'm basically just taking inspiration wherever I can find it to do some, you know, whatever I find that can be inspiring or interesting to my audience, things of that nature. So I really love what people in the fitness industry are doing in terms of sort of the do-it-yourself challenges. Like, hey, like a 30-day squat challenge or, you know, 2-month push-up challenge, whatever it might be. And so I love that idea, and I hadn't seen anybody doing it in the branding space. So I wanted to give people the tool set to basically tackle it themselves if they wanted to get that foundation built for themselves. So I actually, all of this content you can find free on my blog. I have all 28 days there. But what I did was I formatted it into an ebook so that people could give it to a friend, family member, take it for themselves on the road, wherever they were, and basically be able to tackle it themselves. So inspiration came from the fitness industry, but all the information there is, you know, squarely within the branding space.
How did you go about filling each day, like defining each of the steps that the reader needs to take to, you know, establish their brand?
Yeah, that was one of the more interesting challenges, because the 28 days was was really a, like it was just a, it was an almost like a number I made up. I wanted to make sure that it was manageable within a month. I thought that would be the perfect amount of time.
Yeah.
And so I said, how can I structure all of this to make sure that it fits within these 4 weeks? So what I basically did was I took a timeline of what our typical client might look like, and I took the timeline of the kinds of things we would do for them, you know, in that initial onboarding phase, brand discovery, brand strategy, building and growing your audience, all of that. And I spread it out over 4 weeks. And so each week has its own focus. Like the first week is just building a foundation and all of those strategy steps. Another week is all about building your audience and growing your audience. And then another stage is like the last one is sort of those next steps, like getting in front of influencers and how to get on third-party authoritative publications and those kinds of things.
Do you regret the limit of the 28 days? Do you feel like, or do you feel it should have been shorter? Do you feel it should have been longer? Or are you're right now, after looking at it and seeing it and releasing it, you're like, 28 days was a great choice. It was perfect. Do you feel that way?
It's an interesting question. I actually spent, before I came to Brand Yourself, I also spent a couple of years doing music production, specifically electronic music production. And these kinds of questions would come up all the time when producing songs. It's like, were you ever happy with where you really were at the end of that song? And it's like, I think you just get done at a certain point. Like, you keep working and you keep working, but eventually you have to move on to the next project. And I know there are tons of artists and authors and people that feel this way, but I'm happy with the format of the 28-day challenge. I'm sure that I could keep hacking away at it and making it better, but after a certain point, it was just time to move on to the next challenge.
I think
initiative.
The next book you need to do needs to be 28 days later. And then, well, no, it, I know.
The Sandra Bullock movie?
I'm, I'm saying no. The zombie movie. I'm saying it to be funny, but I'm also saying it because basically what you're creating in that point, if you're doing the 28-day challenge that way, is a personal development plan. You're doing something, you know, it's like that. So anytime you do something like that, you're going to revisit. It doesn't mean that you can't recycle that 28-day plan. It just means that you may have to escalate the opportunities and jump over the hurdles and so like that, and figure out objectively, like look in the mirror and say, okay, well, this is where I succeeded, this is where I failed, and this is where I can move forward, if you're using it in like personal growth, you know. So I mean, the next one could be 28 days later. I think you might have
That actually might be a good way to market it too.
Possibly.
I think it's a great suggestion, because the 28 days is really about building that initial foundation. And of course, some of those steps are going to be repeated, but some of them are completely irrelevant after you've, right? If you've if you've already built an initial audience, you don't need to build it again. So I do like that suggestion.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, luckily I've had the advantageous position of being critiqued a lot in my corporate life, so it's one of those things where it's like you're looking for opportunities. So within that 28 days, if you're honest with yourself, or if you can be honest with yourself, some of us don't have that ability, you know, you can find opportunities for growth and whatnot. You can do it in fitness as well, but I mean, like, if you're talking about personal development, you know, there are definitely tools out there for it. But yeah, look at it like that, not a failure, just a continuation of the journey.
I like it.
So looking at the book, it seems that blogging seems to be an important pattern that you touch on a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting your content out there, like we kind of talked about earlier, is really important to, one, mitigate if there are any kind of negative things, to push those down, but more importantly, to get your own thoughts out there, get the thoughts that you want for your persona into the SERPs, either project yourself as the subject matter expert you are or people perceive you to be. I just want to read a blurb from your book. We live in a world where your online reputation can be your strongest asset or your biggest liability. Now, what advice would you give to people about the dangers of not suitable for television content? Because there's a lot of people out there that aren't cognizant of that kind of oversharing, and they just put anything out there. And I read one of your articles on Huffington. I think it was your latest one. The companies, clients, and colleges are Googling you now. What is that, the latest one? Yeah. So what kind what kind of actionable takeaways can you tell people from that article, and things to be cognizant of when you're putting up risque content on like a Facebook or a Twitter?
Well, first of all, stop sharing that shit publicly. that is the number one. Like, what is the need for sharing? You know, you don't need to tweet out that how hammered you are. You just don't. You know,
and, but how will people know?
Save.
Let's play devil's advocate really quick.
Okay.
Say you're a high school senior and you've been blogging or you've been Facebooking that shit, right? Constantly. Like, you're at football games. You're not aware that, you know, within 2 years you're getting a job at company ABC, right?
Yeah, you're entering a whole new world.
Or you're taking... Yeah, you're entering a whole new world. You're interning at wherever, and they're looking at this, and they see some questionable content. When do you need to start thinking about that?
Can't you just chalk that up to capricious youth? I mean, like, if you're looking at something, it's
you can't.
If I'm a high school senior, I'm not looking for a job, hopefully, that they're going to be Googling me for until after a college career.
You've been communicating that kind of stuff all through your high school career, possibly, and now you're a senior, and you're still communicating that kind of stuff on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And then the next year, you're a freshman at college, and you're looking for an internship. And that company, ABC Company, is looking through your social media, and they see some questionable things. I'll let you answer this question, Ryan.
Yeah, it's tough, because you hope that the more that we hear about people losing jobs or... there have been some pretty big time sports players that have lost some of their positions. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where you hope that people are hearing about this stuff more, and so that they start to take it to heart. But if they don't, and yes, you can theoretically chalk it up to capricious youth. But the reality is that employers aren't, because there are plenty, you know, there are plenty of people that are applying to these jobs that look exactly the same as you do on paper. So if they look you up and you happen to look extremely negative online, that gives them a new thread of insight into who you are. So luckily, one of the features that Brand Yourself has is, it's called the social scanner. And what you can do is plug your profiles, Twitter, Facebook, you plug them in and it will flag for you what some of the most inappropriate posts are so that you can go back and delete them.
That's very valuable.
It's still in the early stages. It's a machine learning piece of software in the product where it's, you know, we've now had millions and millions of people marking inappropriate, appropriate, etc. So it's gotten to be pretty good, and you will still get some false positives, but the important part is that it's showing you. I had the same thing, right? Like, I work in the branding industry, and I didn't realize some of the stuff that I had said in high school, maybe it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't like related to alcohol necessarily, but it might have been related to, you know, I got mad at teachers for assigning work or whatever it might have been. Just silly stuff that if someone were to look back and see the kind of way that I was talking about teachers, talking about schoolwork, any of that kind of stuff, they would have looked at me in a really bad light. So to be able to plug that in, delete the posts that are not appropriate anymore. And now, I mean, now I'm in a place where, of course, moving forward, I'm going to be much more cognizant about it. But some people don't have that liberty if they get caught with something online.
To append to that point that you made, Ryan, everyone should be thinking about that way ahead of the game. You should be thinking about that kind of thing to kind of let go of childish things, if you will, when you get to that high school point.
Yeah, I would say save if you need to share that kind of stuff. There are plenty of social networks now that are not publicly facing.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, stick to group text, stick to WhatsApp, stick to Snapchat, whatever you're sticking to, but just with the understanding that your online reputation matters a lot, and it's time to realize that your online persona is something that employers and clients are going to review. So if you're in high school and college, you may do something that's stupid, and you just need to realize, like, if you wouldn't say it to your boss, then you shouldn't put it publicly online.
Well
said.
What do you feel about if I have a Facebook account, everything is private? Do you recommend your clients even reviewing the posts then? Because there could be people that are connected to friends that perhaps still could have somehow seen it.
Yeah, I actually had a friend of a friend at my company who was, he had his Facebook settings on private, but somehow the company that he was applying for basically put, I've never seen this before in my career, but they printed out an entire booklet of, like, here are all the things that we found about you negative
online.
Are
you kidding me?
It was incredible. Yeah. I don't know how they spent all the time to do it, but a lot of it was from Facebook.
Wow.
Yeah, they have a department, and they have no other time, no better time.
Fantastic lawsuit.
Good. Yeah, exactly. What job was it? What job role was it?
Well, I'm sure we can't say
that. Well, I mean, you can vaguely say, was it?
But what I think, well, it was a consulting job. But what I think happened was, there is the possibility that the dude just messed up with his privacy settings, which I've seen before. But the other possibility is that someone at the company had a friend or basically like someone who, you know, someone who was basically through the privacy settings just by virtue of being a friend of this person or a friend of a friend.
Yeah, dude, you can't let that stuff go. I mean, if you put it online, it's online and it's online forever, no matter what your settings are. You just can't put that kind of stuff on Facebook.
Well,
just don't do it.
Well, it's crazy because Facebook actually doesn't have it private by default, and I think that's kind of that's crazy. And,
well, that's not the nature of Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, but their kids get there and stuff. I feel like they should kind of have safeguards in place. Like if you're under a certain age, have it be private.
Well, let me give you an example of something, and it's an extreme, and employers are going to start to find this out very fast. there was a couple companies that I worked for who literally, like, I thought it was weird that we didn't drug test. And literally, higher up of people in that thing looked at me and said this. He goes, Jonathan, if we drug tested, we would not have probably one half of our employee workforce. They're going to start to see that everybody is going to express themselves on social media. It's social. Now, if they don't want to be tethered to that person or who they are, sure, it's going to happen. But they're going to realize that their candidates are going to run out really quick. I mean, anytime you hire someone, it is a crapshoot. They are giving you, and not to diminish what you're doing, but they're paying people to create a persona that does not exist.
There's so many people out there, and employers have their pick. So you might say you have a bunch of people out there, and I totally understand where you're coming from, Jonathan, and I could appreciate that. The world is so competitive that, and there's so many different people that are applying for the same job that you are, that it's so easy to filter out and get the person that maybe doesn't have those kind of things or isn't a legal liability. Yeah. Ryan?
Yes, you're absolutely right. So there's two ways to think about it. The first is, at a bare minimum, just as a filtering tool, right? Like, if employers are filtering out, they're going to look at certain things on your resume to filter you out. They're going to look at certain things on your cover letter. Like, if you have a blatant typo in the first sentence of your cover letter, or you addressed it to the wrong company, all right, that's a really easy way for me to filter you out. Same thing, if I find something negative about you online, that's a really easy way for me to filter you out. Now, that's just like a bare minimum filtering. On the other hand, if you've taken the effort to showcase all the positive stuff about you online, right? So I look at one person and I don't find anything negative, but I don't find anything at all. Like, they're just irrelevant online, versus the person that comes to me, you know, pretending I'm still the employer here, they come to me and they look incredible online. They have done so much work to make themselves look great. I'm like, wow, this is someone who cares. This is someone who cares about their positioning online. I know that they're not going to be a legal liability, etc. So, you know, there's the filtering out stage, but there's also the thought process of, resumes only show me so much. Hiring is a bit of a crapshoot, but I could see the effort that this person is putting in, or even to another extent, like, wow, this person has gotten published on X, Y, and Z. They've hit this award, this honor, etc., and it's all online for me to see. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you can paint that photo. I mean, and you can do that on LinkedIn. You can do that on other sites. When people start going into your personal, you know, and they do, you know, so then there's nothing against it. Now, I will say, there's nothing against it now, but there are certain laws. There are certain things you literally cannot. I mean, you can't literally ask someone if they have a car. You can ask them if they have a reliable reliable way to get to work on time. You can't ask them if they're pregnant. You can't ask them. Like, there are so many things that you literally can't ask. It just feels like a shady way at the present moment to be able to get into someone else's life. Sure, if that person does take the effort, what that tells me is that person is putting effort into themselves. Now, at a young person's sort of mindset, especially if we're going to go with the example of freshmen out of college looking for an internship, I deal with a lot of kids around that age. Most of them are not thinking about that. So hopefully this is a conversation that might provoke that. But realistically, employers are going to start coming up very, very dry, very, very quickly, I think, if that's what they start going on as far as a hireable means. And I think that it's going to put them in an actionable position leading on. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like, with all the things that we're not allowed to ask as employers that are somewhat critical questions, something like this, digging into someone's personal, we're treading some interesting water.
Well, they even do credit checks on people now too, before they hire you. They're not just a background check, but they check your credit.
Sure.
And they will base, they say they don't base their decision on it, but I can't believe they wouldn't do it unless they were.
It's a finite amount of companies. If you want to talk about the companies that employ most of the country and so at that, most of them aren't doing credit checks just because of the sheer mass amount of people and the cost output to it. Yeah. That's probably the only thing stopping them is the cost output.
Well, we got to think about that. It's not just an everyday kind of job or position, but we have to think about the context of very competitive business and fast-moving business. So if you're probably looking to be a director of X, Y, and Z, or a senior-level executive at a company, if these things are possibly in your career future, then maybe you should think about that before you take social media as a kind of given and don't really think about it or worry about it. But I think we've all kind of talked this point dry, and there's lots of talking points about it. I'd just like to move on a little bit in the conversation. But to talk about this, Ryan, who would you say is the more difficult kind of client that you have? Is it the young professionals or is it more the C-level executives?
It's an interesting question. They both have their challenges. You know, the C-level exec, I mean, those are the people that, it depends on their goals. If they're just trying to suppress something, they may be a little bit less patient. On the other hand, sometimes I hear less from C-level executives because they're so busy. And they already have so much going on. Whereas the young professional maybe, you know, has a little bit more time to do, you know, communication, but I don't want to dig myself into too big of a hole.
You kind of touched on this earlier where you were saying that the C-level executives just want you to do it, right? It's do it.
Seriously, do it.
Not really thinking about the technology behind it or the time it takes to maybe, suppress that you made a rude gesture about Kentucky Fried Chicken or something, whatever the case may be.
Or you had a Pornhub app open in your political ad.
Something like that could have happened. But I mean, so I know it obviously depends on the client, but so you think maybe it's more like the younger guys or gals?
Yeah, I guess I would say, obviously, it depends on the client, but I do find that more of the C-level execs are a little bit more impatient in terms of just looking for results. Yeah. But it is completely, you know, depends.
Would you chalk that up basically to kind of like an education thing? I know that we talked about like you have to sort of educate and re-educate them on, you know, they believed what people said about it being something simple and easy. So I'm sure what's probably arduous and is that scripted repeating that has to go on, I'm sure, every time, you know, because you'll get the same questions that hit and you're like, oh, here we go again. How long is this going to take to convince you that, you know, all these people that have sold you search engine optimization are wrong?
Yeah, part of the issue, just to clarify, is that many of the C-level executives that we work with are also older. So, mm-hmm. Of course, they come from a different generation. Younger professionals might understand more about what it takes to put out an online brand, fix search results, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, some of the age difference plays into it, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Speaking of putting out material, horrible segue here, but you were for the Huffington Post. How did you start writing for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the work that I started doing for myself, for my own online brand, began as a way to basically try out new things for my clients. I was just doing it to try and see what would happen, kind of thing. So I would blast editors from tons of publications just to see what kind of feedback I would get or what kind of response, see if I could get on. And when I was trying to get on Huffington Post, nobody responded except somehow for Arianna Huffington. And I don't know if it was her actually responding from her email or, you know, the plenty of associates that work under her that maybe are helping to manage her email. But the response I got was like, yeah, we'd love to have you on our on Huffington Post. We'll send you an invite.
See, I'm convinced that everybody at the Huffington Post is Arianna Huffington, and she is literally a robot.
Now that she left, what happened?
Oh yeah,
what
of
happens
course.
Now?
Oh yeah, well, did she leave, or is she just submerged in a Bacca tank somewhere, like just waiting to be reborn after you know, Kylo kills?
Oh, like a phoenix.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? She's gonna do something. She's gonna come out. She's gonna come out as Arianna Huffington Grande next and do a music career.
I'd like to see that.
Would you?
No.
No.
I think this is the start.
No. I don't want to
like
see
the start
Ariana
of like
Grande
a new...
period.
Yeah, but Arianna Huffington Grande, so much greater.
Oh yeah, with the Huffington in there? That sounds so I don't know, regal, right?
It's an awesome name. Kinda jealous.
Yeah.
So what was your experience like working with the Post?
It's been really great. I've actually because of all the shuffling that's been going on there, I've been focusing more of my efforts on entrepreneur.com. For a couple reasons. One, all the shuffling that has been going on, but two, I actually every time I publish on Entrepreneur, they do some of the sharing for me. And just by virtue of working with them regularly, I've gotten into a weekly column schedule there, and I so appreciate them sharing my pieces with their existing audience that I've basically made that my home. Working with Huffington Post has been great, though, and sometimes I'll still, you know, dive back in there and publish, just not with the same frequency.
What's the, are they hardcore editors? Like, do they really go through back and forth the chain, or do they just take what you have? And...
So with Huffington Post, they've actually been moving more into turning the website into more of a blog for a blog platform, sort of like Medium, which is really interesting because you think of Huffington Post, you think of like, I don't know, more of a news site than a Medium publishing platform, but it seems that's the direction they're going. So actually for me, it took a little bit of the authority away from publishing there. But the editorial process was not crazy. Sometimes you get some edits, sometimes you get an article rejected, that kind of thing. But really for me, it was also... Oh, this is another interesting point. When you publish on Huffington Post, since they are moving more in the direction of making it a publishing platform for the masses, not everything gets put on their front page. So your blog post may get lost in... you know, the ether of Huffington Post blog post that never gets seen if you don't push it out yourself with your existing audience versus publishing on Entrepreneur. If you get it on entrepreneur.com, it goes on their front page. They share it on their social, you know, like they take you on as a, you know, almost like you're part of the Entrepreneur family versus Huffington Post. It's like, hey, do what you will kind of thing.
Ryan, we kind of have a new concept where we're working on. It's I'm springing this on you, so I'm going to go first with mine. Kind of getting in the closing last little bits of the show. The question is, what is something interesting that each of you have come across this week? It's a group question. It can be anything. It can be you came across a new beer that you like, something in technology, anything really. Since I'm springing this on you, mine is SVG2. They just released the final spec, and it's getting evaluated. A lot of really interesting, pretty awesome stuff in it, like mesh gradients, hatch fills, improvements to stroke calculation. A lot of really neat things coming to SVG2, so people are going to have some really nice visualizations and vector on the web. So that's my interesting thing. And Frederick's done this before, so I'll give it to Frederick next.
Yeah, I guess my new interesting thing was I was listening to UX Defenders the other day, and they had this gentleman on there, Nir, N-I-R. I don't really know how you say his name, and I don't know his last name either, but I'm looking at the website, and I'll add it in the show notes. He has this book called Hooked, and it's all about the you've heard of this? Yeah, it's Hooked. How to Build How to Build Habit Forming Products, and it is so interesting, and I thought his talk was great, and I just purchased his book this weekend, and I've been going through it, and I found it fascinating.
Yeah,
so
I've read
definitely
it.
Recommend that for anybody.
Yeah.
Oh, you have
yeah,
read
it's
this.
Phenomenal. I highly
recommend. Okay, yeah, I'm sure you listen to the same podcast I do, so
in that book does Toodles also lose his marbles?
He does. How did you know? Man.
Dude, I don't know. As soon as you said Hook, all I could think of was every quote from Hook that I know. And it's like, run home, Jack, run home, movie. Jack, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. For me, nothing I can actually share on the podcast at the present moment. I have something.
Oh,
but
hint.
I it's too closely related to Trend Riot, to be honest with you, to be able to spit out on the podcast. But there is something that I have to be mysterious at the present moment.
All right, teaser. Let's go ahead to you, Ryan. Anything?
Let's see. There's an app I'm really keen on recently called Headspace.
Headspace, okay.
Yeah, it's basically a meditation app. And I love using it during my commutes. And recently they added a kids section to the app, which is kind of a cool way of getting kids involved with meditation and mindfulness early on.
Hmm.
And I actually don't have any kids and I haven't used the kids section, but it seemed like a really cool addition to the app.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Okay, it looks cool. Interesting.
Check it out.
Yeah, thank you.
Now we get into my section, which is it's the same every time, but it is the most interesting to me because it peels away the layers to kind of what we to my favorite one of my favorite human traits, which is selfishness. So I like to know how people recharge. You've got a long, you know, not like what you do with other people. I mean, sometimes other people, I don't want to limit you. But what is the one thing or the things that you do that no matter how tough anything has been, this is the thing that just gets you to full, charges the iPhone to full?
To recharge, I love doing things that basically improve either my mental state or my physical state. It's just the way of getting back to, getting back to my roots. So the Headspace app I mentioned before, I find really, really helpful. Working out, you know, going to the gym, going for a run, that kind of thing, I find really helpful. And sometimes it's just vegging out, you know, surfing the web, playing a game, something like that. But, recharging for me is all about improving my mental, my physical, all of that.
I got it. And then real quick, most selfish desire. If you could have anything, do anything, not have to do anything anymore, most selfish desire from the hip.
I guess I would say it's just getting as much success for myself as possible. I don't think it's wrong,
no.
But I guess you could say it's selfish in that I'm only thinking about myself and that kind of desire. I'm always trying to fill the gap between where I am now and where I can be, and so filling that gap is what I consider success for myself. So sure. Always trying to, you know, improve and get better and get to the next stage.
To what end?
Yeah. To what end?
Yeah,
it's the journey, just like knowing that I'm continuously improving myself.
It's ever learning.
Yeah,
absolutely. You're the guy. You're the guy who, when the devil asks what you want for your soul, you go languages, all the languages. It's like, what? You could have money, power, anything. Languages. I want everything. So I want to know everything. All right. Well, Ryan, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. We're gonna wrap it up here, but you know, push forward, man. And I'm looking forward to 28 days later.
All right. Thanks for the suggestion. I'll pass it along to you guys when it's done.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
you have a question or topic you'd like us to discuss, send us your text or audio questions at connect@thundernerdsho.com.
Also, hit us up if you're interested in sponsoring the show, and don't forget to pimp us on iTunes with a like or review.
I like romance novels. They have happy endings. Do-wa, song for Frederick. Do-wa, song for Frederick. Do-wa, this is a song for Frederick. Yeah.